What were some of the earliest principles that you were taught for living a good life? In my family, I was taught that everyone is expected to help. We had an extensive chore chart for every week with 7 children. I was also taught that there is always room at the table for one more. Even though my parents had 7 children, our friends were always welcome on a moment's notice. I still carry those values. My mom also said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. And I have occasionally, when my kids were whining, trotted out that phrase myself. And I do believe in being conscientious with my words. At the same time, learning to be an activist in the last 30 years of my life has meant that parts of my early training not to say unpleasant things had to be left behind. In this country right now, we need to talk about gun violence and the fact that the NRA controls a whole lot of elections and power in this country. We need to call out the utter insanity that any one of us could walk over to Walmart and buy an assault rifle and then walk into a school and murder as many people as we can. We need to talk about the perversion of political leaders who value their status over the basic safety of children in schools. Those are not nice words. But in order to speak my largest truth in the world and to live up to my larger values, sometimes we need to say the hard words. The courageous leaders, the youth leaders born from the high school tragedy in Parkland, Florida, are saying the difficult truths loudly and clearly. And perhaps they learned some of this courage, the principle of courage, at school. Because after all, Marjorie Stoneham, who their school is named after, was an early Florida suffragette and journalist who spent her entire life protecting the Florida Everglades from development. She spoke loudly, clearly, and bravely. We all learn our values in our families, in our schools, in our faith traditions. And as I say again, thank you for reminding my son that UUU congregations open the door. However, we don't always keep our first values. They change and shift as we find our own voices in the world. I know I was certainly drawn to Unitarian Universalism because of its social justice work and its publication of early feminist theology. But when I entered seminary at age 23, I'm not sure I even knew what the UU principles stated. I'm sure I would have been bothered by the sexist language in them. Just a few years later, though, in 1982, I went to the Unitarian Universalist Association's annual General Assembly held on a college campus in Maine. I was 25 years old at the time and had just finished my second year of divinity school. And one of the main items of discussion that year at our General Assembly was the UU principles. Just the year before, in 1981, the UUA had undertaken a 4-year process to review the principles with the purpose of eliminating the sexist language. The drive for this process came from the Women and Religion Committee created in the early 1970s. But as we all know, large institutions are slow boats to turn. However, by 1985, the final changes were made and the new principles approved. Bylaw Section 2 of the UUA, where our UU principles are located, was first adopted in 1960. And the occasion was the official merger of the American Unitarian Association and the Universalist Church of America to become the UUA. And I'm going to read the 6 principles as stated in 1960 when we merged. In accordance with these corporate purposes, the members of the UUA dedicated to the principles of a free faith unite in seeking, 1, to strengthen one another in a free and disciplined search for truth as the foundation of our religious fellowship. 2, to cherish and spread the universal truths taught by the great prophets and teachers of humanity in every age and tradition, immemorially summarized in the Judeo-Christian heritage as love to God and love to man. 3, to affirm, defend, and promote the supreme worth and dignity of every human personality, the dignity of man, and the use of the democratic method in human relationships. 4, to implement our vision of one world by striving for a world community founded on ideals of brotherhood, justice, and peace. 5, to serve the needs of member churches and fellowships, to organize new churches and fellowships, and to extend and strengthen liberal religion. And finally, 6, to encourage cooperation with men of goodwill in every land. So, in 1985, the sexist language was removed, which communicated something important about our values. But also notice that the sentiments were reordered. What used to be the first principle in 1960 was to strengthen one another. In 1985, affirming the inherent worth and dignity of every person came first. Why the shift? Why did affirming the inherent worth and dignity move from third place to first? Does this change suggest that our values actually shifted? I remember being a small group leader at that GA in 1982 with a marker in hand, trying to capture the discussion, ordering and reordering the lists of words and phrases that our group put forth as we voted and tallied and voted and tallied over and over, trying, hundreds of us, to distill what mattered most to us as Unitarian Universalists. Knowing what is at the deepest core of what you value is not necessarily easy. Now, some of you will remember that Jackson 5 hit song about love from 1980. I don't have a great voice, but we're going to have a little fun with this. Karen said you would play along. So I'm expecting it. So it's that song that goes A, B, C. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3, as simple as Do, Re, Mi, A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, baby, you and me. So I'm going to call out a line, and you're going to sing it back to me, okay? You ready? A, B, C.
A, B, C.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. As simple as Do, Re, Mi.
As simple as Do, Re, Mi.
A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, baby, you and me.
A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, baby, you and me.
I am going to report back to her. You did great. Thanks for that little fun. But love is not that easy. It just ain't. I believe that our UU principles are, in fact, really about stating various sizes and shapes and colors of love. But where is the right place to start? Our first principle was not always our first principle, and it may not always be our first principle. But given what is happening in our country right now, I must confess that I sometimes find it difficult to acknowledge the inherent worth and dignity of every person. And yet I am convinced I must, for I do not want to become a person who can dehumanize another. And I have never had, since the last election, so many congregation members come to me and say, I'm having a really hard time with that first principle. I just finished reading an extraordinary novel based on the Russian attacks in Chechnya in the last 3 decades. It's a brutal read, but important. It's about the brutalization of the ethnic and primarily Muslim population and has given me nightmares for weeks. At the issue of the core of the book is really what happens when one group of people dehumanizes another. What happens to the heart and soul if even one person dehumanizes another? I wonder, is this why the inherent worth and dignity of every person is our first principle? She drew a circle that shut me out. Heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle and took her in. When the principles changed in 1985, that wasn't the end of the conversation. In 1995, the seventh principle was added, respect for the interdependent web of all existence. We were, as a culture, becoming more and more aware of the ecological and environmental damage we were creating. And this awareness called us to affirm a new principle that named the love of our earthly home as essential. Our love had not been quite large enough, and with the seventh principle, we drew it larger. And now there is the question about an eighth principle. Black Lives of UU Organizing Collective, often known as BLUE, B-L-U-U, is urging for the adoption of the eighth principle. Why? 20 years ago, the Unitarian Universalist Association committed to intentionally becoming a multicultural and anti-racist institution. Unfolding events in the UUA in the past year, specifically around hiring practice of UUA and regional staff, have painfully pointed out to us that we still have deep systems of white privilege in our institutional structures. And I encourage you to go back and find the articles about it in the UU World magazine. The president resigned, and the next top two leaders in the UUA resigned as well, and we're looking deeply into the issue, and a new commission has been formed to help us go deeper. We mean well, those of us who are consider ourselves as white progressive liberals. But those of us who have lived with white privilege all of our lives swim in it like fish in the water. And sometimes we can't see our own culture and we recreate it. Sometimes we can't see it until people of color point it out to us. So perhaps we need this eighth principle to call us powerfully and intentionally to the work so needed, so that in fact someday we can actually live into our commitment to be that beloved multiracial faith community. We may be on the way, but we aren't there. The eighth principle proposed by Black Lives UU says, we, the member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association, covenant to firm and promote, journeying towards spiritual wholeness by working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community by our actions that accountably dismantle racism and other oppressions in ourselves and in our institutions. The point I want to make, first of all, is that our principles are a living document, always asking how do we need to see love larger? How do we keep making the circle bigger and wider so that everyone can stand together? How do we then frame that vision to move forward into a more radical and whole love? As the UUA wrestles with the need to update its core principles, so does each of us. How have you had to face, with humility, that your circle was exclusive in some way? How have your values and behaviors needed to change? If our goal is beloved community with all beings, with justice and wholeness for all beings, What does it look like? What principles do we need? Which comes first? Which one is the biggest and holds the rest? Or how are they related? Obviously, there's really more than one correct answer, but that's the question that Black Lives UU is asking us right now, because we aren't there yet. And as the UUA as a body revisits this process of clarifying our values over and over, we do this individually throughout our own lives. We have to keep asking, what do I value the most? By what principles do I live and organize my life? And who have I left out of the circle? I'll tell you a little life story here. As an older teenager, I remember the gut-wrenching moments when I learned about the large-scale traditional meat industry. As a response, I chose to give up meat. I chose not to be part of that kind of suffering. But many years later, when pregnant, I craved meat. Raspberries and red meat. That's what I needed. Obviously, it was about the iron. So I had to review my behaviors and values. So now I eat white meat and fish, but only organically raised cage-free meat and eggs in small amounts. But I also realize that these foods are far more expensive, and not everyone can afford to eat this way. I used to be a lot more self-righteous about my eating habits. But then I realized that living in the world according to my highest values is nearly impossible in a nation that is structured with capitalistic greed at the center. So I make no judgments about what others eat. I just know that since I can afford to eat organically, I do so. I use my food budget to push the food industry, I hope, just a bit, by supporting family farms and organic farms in particular. But we all make choices in our imperfect world about how we can and can't live up to our principles. We already figured out that living our love is not as easy as ABC, 1, 2, 3, do, re, mi, baby, you and me. Most of us have not drawn the circle as wide and as large as it can be, because we live always at the intersection of our highest values and principles and the constraints of our cultural systems, which make it difficult to actually live out our love fully and ethically. It's important not to despair when we fall short of our visions. For that reason, I want to end this sermon with a reading by a colleague, the Reverend Vanessa Southern. It's called Even This Is Enough. So I want you to hear this as a loving pastoral touch, to appreciate the work and challenge of making the circle wider, and sometimes how hard it can be. So again, I invite you to settle in and hear the love that affirms the worth and dignity of you and all beings. So much undone. So much to do. So much to heal in us and the world. So much to acquire. A meal, a healthy body, a fit one, a lover, a job, a better job. Proof we have and are enough. And up against it, the reality of all that falls short and the limits of today. We honor the limits. If your body won't do what it used to do, for right now, let it be enough. If your mind won't stop racing or can't think of that word, let it be enough. If you are here utterly alone and in despair, be all of that here with us. If today you cannot sing because your throat hurts or you don't have the heart for music, be silent. When the offering plate goes around, if you don't have money to give or the heart today to give, let it pass in love. The world won't stop spinning on her axis if you don't rise to all occasions today. Love won't cease to flow in your direction. Your heart won't stop beating. All hope won't be lost. You are part of the plan for this world's salvation. Of that, I have no doubt. The world needs its oceans of people striving to do good, to carry us to the shores of hope and wash fear from the beachheads, and cleanse all wounds so they can heal. But oceans are big, and I am sure there are parts that don't feel up to the task some days. Rest if you must then, like the swimmer lying on her back who floats, or the hawk carried on the cushions of air. Rest in pews made to hold weary lives, in space carved out for the doing of nothing much but being gathered in love. Perhaps then you will feel in your bones, in your weary heart, the aching, healing sense that this is enough, even this, that we are enough, that you are enough. Blessed be.